I remember like it was yesterday the first time I broke 100. I remember the course I played, I remember the weather conditions, I remember the people I was with, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about my swing that day. Contrast that though with any given Sunday medal, where the stakes are infinitely higher and I want it badly, like really badly. I remember those rounds vividly, but not fondly. Before I arrive in the first tee, I've got everything planned out. I know the club I'm using, the tee height, the exact swing I want to put on the club, and then shank, whiff, top, hook. You see, research shows that the best performances happen when we're not thinking about technique. The worst ones, though, are when we're monitoring every movement. Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Golf Yourself Healthy with me, Chris Lynch. And two things before we get into the thick of today's episode. First of all, I've got a date for your diaries. That is Wednesday, the 1st of April, 2026. That is the day we launch a brand new community space here at Golf Yourself Healthy, especially designed for average everyday golfers who strive for happiness and joy first and performance second. And if that sounds like a community that you'd like to be a part of, make sure you're subscribed here. Around that exact date, we will be revealing all and telling you how you can join that community. Secondly, though, if you missed our last episode, episode 47, entitled Why I'm Starting Over, How Golf Has Failed Average Golfers, please make sure you check that out. It certainly sets the scene for the launch of this new community that I just mentioned. And also, I need to say thanks to those of you who, especially those of you who watched on YouTube and left loads of really insightful and thought-provoking comments. It's quite apparent to me that this idea of golf having failed us average golfers has really struck a chord with many of you. And I'm confident that today's episode is going to do exactly the same thing. So I want to talk to you about autopilot, being on autopilot. So throughout today's episode, I'm going to be referencing two very important pieces of golf research that have been conducted. And the first of which is by a researcher by the name of Shan Bylock. Shan Bylock is considered one of the world's leading experts on the subject of performance under pressure. And when you put that subject in the context of golf, the word choking comes to mind quite often. And I have to admit, I don't like the word. And perhaps the reason I don't like that word is because I myself have been prone to choking before. Choking is a thing, according to her. And actually, the relief we can enjoy here is that we are not born chokers. It is not something that someone is inherently more prone to being a choker versus another. If we experience it, we can work on, and there's a way to remedy it. And actually, one of the prevailing theories that she has, it's backed up by her research findings I'm going to share with you today. She's done a lot of work in and a lot of research in sport, working with athletes, but in particular, she's done a lot of work in golf. This notion, concept of being on autopilot is something that she's looked at extensively. And basically what she says is that whenever we try, especially those of us who are more experienced golfers who have played it for a number of years, and although we might be average everyday golfers, we've acquired a certain set of skills and our ability to navigate our way around a golf course in the time we've been playing. Those of us in that category, when we try and control the outcome of a particular shot, let's say, as compared with whenever we're more relaxed in the way that we go about preparing for and executing a shot, it's in those moments where we try and control the outcome and overthink things, basically, where the outcome tends to be worse. Whereas if we just tend to execute, just go with it and tackle the shot without overthinking it too much, that's when we tend to find our best performances, and our best scores often will follow too. And she's basically saying that choking can ultimately happen when we are trying to overthink things, or we're overthinking things and getting in our own way, as she puts it. And so the stress and anxiety builds the more that we introduce hesitation, the more time we take over a shot. And actually, some of this research then gets me to thinking about slow play ultimately, and how slow play may impact our performance. Whereas if we just play with a stride, play with a certain pace and a flow, her research seems to suggest that actually we play better. So one particular research study that she looked at was, she had a group of 28 golfers, 15 of whom were relatively inexperienced, relative newcomers. And she had a group of 13 students who had at least 10 years golfing experience. And what she found was, these skilled golfers, and it was a putting exercise, okay, that she got this group to work on. What she got the two groups to do was to perform, first of all, 10 consecutive imaginary or imagined putts. One group was asked to, or rather both groups, they had 10 putts that were meant to be putted as quickly and effectively with as little hesitation and thought as possible. And then they were to perform another set of 10 putts in which they were to take their time over those more, imagine and visualize and prepare for the putts more before executing the putt. And what was so fascinating about the findings in that study was that actually it was the novice golfers performed better and hold more putts, I suppose, when they were able to take their time over it more. The opposite was true of the experienced golfers, but with the putts that were to be sped up or to be performed and hit with less thought and as fast but as accurately as possible, the experienced golfers had more success with those putts than the novice golfers did. And therefore, the theory that seems to come out of this research is that the more skilled golfers amongst us can perhaps benefit from doing things quicker, because it prevents us actually from thinking too much about actions that have otherwise become automatic and procedural in nature. But the novices, by contrast, they seem to take their time from thinking about things that aren't yet familiar to them. So, you know, I take this away. I mean, again, going to the novice group, perhaps I think, well, that's really fascinating, because that to me might explain why those of you out there who are perhaps newer to golf and still learning the game let me draw this back on my own personal experience. I know for sure, because I used to get feedback on it, in an indirect, sometimes indirect, probably a bit of both, direct and indirect feedback from playing partners, which was, you're taking too long. And the playing experience with me was probably not a fun one or a pleasant one, because I was slowing the group up because I just didn't have the skill that I needed. Whereas with time and practice and experience, that has come, and I've definitely, and that's been valid. My pace of play having improved has been validated by same playing partners who over the years have said, you've improved on that basis. So I can definitely relate to how stressful and that feeling of feeling judged if you are a newer golfer. But then if I bring this back to what I said right back at the start of this episode, which was around the first time I ever broke 100, I mean, that was quite a few years ago now, and it kind of came completely out of the blue. And I think looking back in it, perhaps the key thing there was the environment and the context in which that round was played. It was played casually with a group of, I was playing with a group of eight guys. We were split across two four balls, and it was just it was there were no high stakes. You know, we were playing for prizes. I mean, I think we did a Stableford format, but ultimately there was something about the extent to which, or the conditions in the environment I was in, the people I was with, I felt comfortable with. I just was quite happy to stand over a shot, not think about it too much, just hit the shot. And more often than not, it actually ended up the ball where I wanted it to end up. But on the other hand, I can think of countless times in my golfing life, my everyday average golfing life, where I've played competitive rounds. I don't relish it. I'm nervous beforehand. I don't particularly I don't enjoy those rounds necessarily. But I'm analyzing every beforehand, before the round, during the round, and nothing feels comfortable or natural to me. One other way I can really relate to this is, how amazing is it that when we hit a stray ball, let's say out of bounds, using our first ball on any given hole, and then we throw caution to the wind on the provisional or three off the tee ball, and then we just crack it up the middle. I don't know about you, but in those situations, I mean, I step away from it and you joke with your playing partners, kind of like, wish I'd done that first time. But there's something in what Shan Baylock is saying here, which is, if we can apply that same approach, which is maybe just step up to the ball with less hesitation, be quicker and swifter about deciding the shot type or the intention that you have behind that shot and just execute, maybe the outcome is going to be better 9 times out of 10, as opposed to if you stand over it, think about it, deliberate over it. So that is one other really fascinating thing for us to think about. To round out the section, though, I've shared my experience, my thoughts on that. I'd love it if you were to tell me your experience with being on autopilot, activating autopilot. Have you done it? Are you familiar with this concept? Tell me about when it's worked for you, or equally tell me about the times when you've run into paralysis by analysis. I'd love to see your comments. Finding a good golf coach is a minefield. You often have to try out a few of them before you strike gold. I remember one coach in particular I worked with many years ago who gave me an endless list of things to memorize. Grip pressure, shoulder turn, hip rotation, weight transfer, wrist hinge, head position, follow through. I could probably go on. Rather than instilling me with confidence, working with him had the opposite effect. I find myself heading out in the golf course with my mind and my body in knots, completely unable to execute an effective golf swing and extracting next to zero enjoyment from the game. The more I thought, the worse I played. And that, folks, is what they like to call paralysis by analysis. So at this point, I would like to introduce into our conversation a second piece of research, like I promised I would. And this time we're going to take a look at a piece of research done by Gabriella Wolf and other research associates that worked with her. And Gabriella Wolf, in the simplest way of describing it, she has looked into the science of overthinking, particularly in a golf context, and how we can overcome that. And in one particular study that she conducted, she took a group of 36 students, all of whom had an equal level of golfing ability. And that study focused on teaching them the art of a pitch shot in golf. Now, sidebar at this point, the pitch shot is definitely one of those shots that I have tended to struggle with in the past. I find they're quite fiddly shots. They are ones which, although I have now since been taught what to do by my golf coach and how to approach a pitch shot, that is every time I encounter one of those on a golf course, leaving myself, say, maybe, I don't know, 70 yards in from the fairway into the green, they give me the heebie-jeebies, basically. And without question, I overthink those. I go immediately to a whole bunch of muddled thoughts and trying to, in a very panicked way, remember what my golf coach has taught me. Nothing feels automatic. Nothing feels competent. Nothing feels good about that. And what I end up doing is fundamentally overthinking it. And then by the time I'm ready to pull the trigger, I fat it or I back out of it, or it just doesn't go well. So this is why then for me, I find this particular piece of research so, so interesting, right? So the way in which this group of students were taught to approach that a pitch shot differed. So one group received instruction which had an external focus, and the other group had an instructional style that encouraged them to have an internal focus. So if I explain the difference between those, external focus is looking at the movement of a specific implement or object. So in this case, the golf club. So the movement of the golf club during the swing, the position of the club face, and it might also include focusing on an image, fixing on a certain spot on the green, or focusing at the flag or a specific target. Okay, so that is what having an external focus is asking you to focus on when you're approaching a certain shot in golf. Internal focus, on the other hand, is looking more as the clues in the name here is internally, like within our body. So it's predominantly body movements that this is looking at. So the position of our wrists at takeaway, or what our wrists or our arms are doing on takeaway, or where our elbow is pointing in relation to our body on the take back, things like that. The findings of that research were that the group who were asked to focus externally on the club motion hit more accurate shots as compared to the group with an internal focus, that is the one who had focus on what their body was doing throughout the swing. The headline here is good and bad examples of golf coaching. As I just mentioned a minute or two ago, I can remember very clearly that one golf coach that I worked with a number of years ago and how memorably unpleasant and unhelpful the experience of working with him was. And funnily enough, when I talk about breaking 100 for the first time, the golf course on which I did that, I actually remember being out playing a competitive round of golf on a Sunday with a guy who, it turned out, knew that golf coach, had either had lessons from him before or knew people who had lessons from him before. And he said, oh yeah, he's really technical, that guy. He does tend to fill your head with a lot of technical swing thoughts. And I could really relate to that. I even remember the par 3 hole and the tee box on which that conversation happened. And it was around that exact moment where it was one good example that I was experiencing around that point in time where was, I don't feel comfortable here at all. I do not feel like I have practically taken any of what that golf coach has given me out onto the golf course and feel any degree of confidence to be able to execute it. And I would contextualize it this way. I would say that at any one given time, the human brain, and say where it can relate to a golf swing, it's said that there's probably up to about 40 different parts to the golf swing. A human brain can probably only remember four of those things, up to about four things at any one time. So I've been preloaded with a whole bunch of stuff and I've got next to no chance of being able to process that in any sort of easy or meaningful way on a golf course and to be able to put that into motion or into action. So I have since learned through process of elimination, if you will, that of what good golf coaching looks like and what bad golf coaching looks like. Because since then, I've probably worked with one other golf coach before I've ended up with my current coach, Neil Matthews. So sidebar, if you want to listen to an episode I had with him recently on the podcast, please check that one out. Brilliant episode. And you will hear a guy talking who is, for me, he's the example of what a good golf coach is. And he is the example of the guy who puts things into easier to follow language and is more prone to talking about those externally focused things I just spoke about from that Gabriella Wolf research, which is saying, you know, think about what the club is doing here. Think about what the club face is doing and visualizing and picking a target and things like that. And it's perhaps no accident, therefore, no surprise that under his tuition, I've become a better golfer. I feel more confident in my ability. I have a repeatable golf swing, and I have less noise going on in my head when I walk up to a tee box and stand to address a golf ball. So there is a lesson to be learned here or a reflection point, which is that, at least in my experience and a lot of this research I'm pointing to, is spotlighting the fact that both historically and even to this day, a lot of golf coaching is very heavy on overly technical, internally focused instruction. And so maybe I would say to you is, if you're looking for a golf coach, I would encourage you to go on their website or to go on apps like Skillist, where there's like a database of golf coaches, and do some comparison and just look through the language that they're using. And you'll start to get a feel for their method and their style. And with what I've described to you now, maybe I might encourage you to gravitate more to those who are external, like their teaching style is more externally focused than it is internally focused. For years, I thought I'd feel better about golf when I played better, when my scores got better. So I chased improvement at all costs. But I got frustrated when that improvement didn't follow. The frustration made me play worse, which made me feel more frustrated. Vicious cycle. Then I tried something different. What if I focused on feeling good first, regardless of how I was playing? Something shifted. The frustration dropped, the tension left my shoulders, and weirdly, I started playing better. Feel better first, the golf will follow. Now, you might be watching or listening to this and thinking, no, Chris, just ain't that easy, mate. Well, the first thing I'd challenge you back on is this. Have you tried what I've just suggested? Have you tried starting a round of golf with a clear intention that lays out the purpose of your round of golf on that day? An intention which says something like, okay, today I'm going to remember the good shots I hit. When I walk off this course, I'm going to intentionally remember and focus in on the good ones on the scorecard as opposed to the not so good ones. And I want to focus on maybe the feelings that went alongside the good shots. I want to remember the people I was with, the jokes that were told, the laughs that were had, maybe an intention to notice your surroundings. Heaven knows golf is accessed at and played at some beautiful places. So be present. Maybe have an intention of taking in your surroundings and remembering what made that golf course or that golf club or the clubhouse, whatever it is, particularly memorable. And it really is as simple as that, folks. If you feel compelled by what I've shared today and you feel this resonates with you and you want to be part of a community which puts happiness first and handicap later, get subscribed, watch out for our next episode, and most importantly, watch out for our big launch on April 1st, 2026. But until the next time, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.